happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are tonight, and particularly those of you who are on the roads right now or planning to get into your cars. Please be safe and take all necessary precautions. It's coming down a little bit, and that will continue out throughout the evening, and the snow is going to get heavier, so please be careful. We want to right away get into this story, of course, that everyone's talking about. Former Chicago officer Jason Van Dyke was sentenced to 81 months for fatally shooting Laquan McDonald, and I thought we'd bring on the air with us a former federal prosecutor, Renato Mariotti. He's also a CNN legal analyst and a practicing attorney. Renato, I know a lot of people are glad that a lot of people supported the idea that Officer Van Dyke acted appropriately and within his rights as a police officer. And a lot of people are disappointed and angry. Some people thinking that this is some sort of conspiracy, considering yesterday's results with the innocent verdict from the judge yesterday. What are your thoughts on the judge's ruling today, Renato?
Wow. Well, I don't fall into either of those two camps. So first of all, if you believe that Officer Van Dyke was innocent, I think that question has been settled by the jury's verdict, which was, I thought, a very, very carefully considered verdict that, you know, acquitted him on first degree murder, but convicted him on second degree murder, as well as, a crime that is technically greater under state law, but is lesser, in terms of the way that I think people usually see these things. But, you know, as to the sentence itself, I think there's a very good reasons why people are a little bit disappointed about the sentence. Given that the judge had to make a decision between sentencing Van Dyke as under aggravated battery, which is technically a more serious crime under state law, instead of second degree murder, and the judge made the decision to sentence Van Dyke for second degree murder. And what the judge said is logically second degree murder is the more serious crime, but as a practical matter under state law, aggravated battery is. And so by doing that, the judge essentially allowed himself to pronounce a sentence that effectively was going to be less serious. And I think in doing that, it's understandable, I think, that people who are upset about this, about the crime that was committed, feeling that the sentence is not commensurate with that crime.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people are trying to understand, because he did go into an explanation saying that there were 16 charges of assault with a weapon, right? That those are the ones, and he started talking about. I heard him talking about, you know, if you get shot with, if you shoot someone in the baby finger or in the baby toe, it's still assault, right? But it's not as bad as murdering. Is that kind of what he was trying to say?
Yeah, what he was trying to logically do. So the judge has to sentence Van Dyke based on the most serious crime. And so the judge looked at the aggravated battery convictions as well as the second degree murder convictions. The judge is correct that a second-degree murder conviction sounds more serious. And I think when an ordinary person is considering that conduct, I think as you are, sort of paraphrasing the judge, saying that more serious conduct can be described as second-degree murder versus aggravated battery. You can have, like you said, shooting somebody in the toe can be aggravated battery, and obviously that could not be second-degree murder unless the person, I suppose, died of that wound. And so as a logical matter, I understand what the judge is saying, but as a practical matter, I just want listeners to understand that if the judge had sentenced Van Dyke to aggravated battery, he would have to serve 85% of the sentence as opposed to 50% of the sentence. So you mentioned that, you know, this is a sentence of, you know, I think, what is it, 6 years, 9 months?
Right.
That he's going to serve, he had some time served because he's been in custody. And so then he would serve basically 50% of that sentence overall, whereas an aggravated battery, he would be receiving an 85% sentence. Essentially, the statute would call for a greater sentence in the case of aggravated battery. So, when the judge did this, made that decision to go with second degree murder versus aggravated battery, you know, what it resulted in is a number that would sound larger than what Van Dyke would actually serve. And I have to say, when I was following the judge's ruling and the sentencing, I was thinking that he was going to go higher to have a number that sounded large, but would effectively be less given the fact that it was going to be 50% instead of 85. To me, the sentence is surprising. And I do think people have a right to be upset with the sentence. But I think part of my job here on the air is to help people understand how a judge arrives at something like this. And I want to explain it, but I have to say I wouldn't have made the same judgment if I was him. What happens is the judge has to consider a whole lot of factors and not just the seriousness of the offense. And it was clear the judge here was moved by the fact that Van Dyke is 40 years old, has kids, has never committed a crime before, was a law enforcement officer, and so on. That said, something that I was disappointed the judge did not consider was the fact that at sentencing, Van Dyke was still trying to minimize his own conduct, had not taken responsibility for his actions. And I thought it was inappropriate that the judge was comparing sort of the tragedy on Van Dyke and his family with the tragedy that Laquan McDonald's family faced because they lost their son who did not deserve to be murdered.
And I know this will be a conversation that is ongoing. We're going to talk to Reverend Livingston a little bit later. He was in the courtroom. I also wanted to talk briefly. You know, you and I spoke earlier with Anil Katia about the BuzzFeed article that came out in regards to President mm-hmm. Trump telling Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. And now Mueller has made a statement, not himself, but he has had someone come forward and basically say, hey, this is not exactly what's going on. Well, tell us a little bit about what happened tonight.
Yeah, it was very interesting. This is the first time that we've received a statement from the special counsel's office. And essentially what he said was that this BuzzFeed news article that got a lot of people talking generated a lot of hype today, and it was an article that alleged that not only Michael Cohen, but also there was emails and text messages and documents that showed that the president directed his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress, which would itself be a crime. What Mueller's office said was that story mischaracterized the statements and the evidence that were in the possession of the special counsel's office. So what does that mean? How do we take that? Because essentially it wasn't saying that the story overall was false. So it used this lawyerly word about mischaracterizations. It said that the characterizations were not accurate. What I took that to mean was that the sources that were describing this information to BuzzFeed News described it inaccurately, and it's probably because they weren't lawyers and they were missing some of the nuance, and by doing so, essentially suggested things about that evidence that weren't exactly accurate. And we don't know exactly what that is or isn't. It's not that Mueller is saying that the entire report, that everything they have to say is inaccurate. We don't know what he's referring to. But I think, I think what it does is there was a lot of speculation and also folks even in Congress saying that we need to know the truth about this. We need to start investigating ourselves. And it was starting to get out of hand. And clearly Mueller's office needed to make sure that the public wasn't being led astray.
Well, and you can hear a lot of that conversation with Anil Katia on Renato's podcast On Topic, which should be available in the next few hours, if not tomorrow. And I want to thank you, Renato, for taking this time. I know you got to get up early and do more appearances on CNN. And I know you're very busy both practicing law, doing your podcast, writing for all the different publications, as well as appearing on CNN. So we look forward. I'm sure we'll be talking to you again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Patty.
Have a good night and have a great weekend. Be safe.
Thank you.
Thank you. More after this. Bye-bye. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. Coming up after this, we'll talk to Susan Danenberger and Elliot for our Binge and Uncork segment. What did we watch? It was Barry. Are you watching it? 312-981-7200. Thank you. Every Friday night, we take some time with our favorite winemaker, Susan Dannenberger, and recommend not only a series to binge watch, but also perhaps a bottle of wine to enjoy with it. And joining me on the line is a co-creator of the segment, is Elliot Serrano. We're calling Susan right now, and the series that we chose, I feel a little bit bad, Elliot, for choosing.
Why?
Because it was darker than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I thought it was kind of a comedy. I know that Nick D likes it, and I thought, oh, this will be fun. I guess when, you know, it's in the description that it's about an assassin, you should assume that there's going to be some violence involved. But this got a little bit, there were, like, parts of heads blown off. It was dark, don't you think, Elliot? Oh, wait a minute.
Playing the assassin, you don't, you know, you're kind of expecting there to be, like, a chuckle with every, job that gets done, and there are some scenes where there are no chuckles. So
yeah, it was very dark, and I guess this is a complete flip from what we did last week, which was the Marie Kondo series. Susan, how did you like Barry?
No, you guys were saying, I posted earlier that it was a dark comedy for sure. It was like you're kind of like, this isn't happening, but I can't stop laughing inside. It wasn't like a belly laugh, but inside you're like, oh my gosh, this is my end.
It was enjoyable. And I, for those who don't know, Elliot, do you want to give a little bit of a synopsis of the series?
Well, essentially, Bill Hader is a former Marine who is, you know, a private contractor, so to speak. He's a hitman. And we follow Barry as he's pretty much going on these different jobs, so to speak. But what happens is that he falls into kind of the life of being an actor in Los Angeles, and is, you know, just feels the allure of doing that sort of thing, and just working. I guess he starts working with a local community theater group, which is kind of interesting.
Henry Winkler, he was awesome.
Oh my God,
Henry Winkler. Yeah, Henry Winkler plays the theater company mentor, and yeah, he's hilarious in that. And so it fluctuates between Barry's between the two worlds, and he's trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life.
Well, the thing about Henry Winkler is that you never know what mood he's going to display, because he really does have that sort of actor. Persona about him, where the first time we see him, he's really angry and being really mean, and then he's this really sweet teddy bear, and then he's almost kind of like boy-like when he's flirting with this woman, and then he's a little dark. I mean, every single time, it reminded me of a scene from First Wives Club with Goldie Hawn, where she and Bette Midler are yelling at each other, and someone's saying something about her emotions. She's like, I'm an actress. I have all the emotions. And that's what Henry Winkler reminded me of this movie. He's a scene stealer, and amazing in the series, don't you think?
Oh yeah.
The other the other actor that I love was Anthony Carrigan, who plays NoHo Hank. He's the guy with the bald guy who kind of likes Barry and was glad that, you know, things kind of turned out the way it did. He is so funny. He cracks me up every single time. Yeah, there's was it a Chechenian gang, and then there's a like a Colombian gang, and then there's a turf war, and there's all kinds of madness erupts. And it's one of those series where you're like, okay, how bad can this get? And it can get really bad. It gets as bad as it possibly can.
It does get pretty, pretty bad. And again, it's like what I really liked about it, though, is the writing is so clever. And when you think something, you know, it's going to go in one direction, it just turns in another. Although there are times when you think it's going to become very light and comical, and then boom, left turn right into darkness. So, you know, the show certainly keeps you guessing.
Now, Susan, we're doing the Binge and Cork segment with Susan Dannenberger, our favorite winemaker from Dannenberger Family Vineyards. You can go to dannenbergervineyards.com for more information. And Susan, when we binge these series every week, do you watch them alone, or is your husband watching them, any of your kids?
I usually watch them alone, except it depends on the series. Clayton's wants to join, or Doug wants to join. It just so happened that Doug got this Barry series was pretty good. So he's like, I can watch this one. So he did watch this one with me.
And what did he think about it?
He did not He liked it. He did like it. I think every once in a while I'd catch him doing a smirk. I think definitely my favorite scene, and probably one of his favorites, was when Barry finally just went off on Henry Winkler about his whole life and what he was doing. And Henry thought he was doing like an audition.
Exactly.
And he was like, that's amazing. Oh my gosh, you're brilliant. And it was just the whole idea of like being real is fake was hysterical to both of us. So
if you watch the series on Amazon, I'm not sure if they do the same thing on HBO, if you record it, but they have at the end of the series a little bit behind the scenes, and they talk about that when they were writing the final episode, they didn't know how they were going to end. So they talk a little bit about how the first episode came into play, and it's really brilliant. They did a great job with the series. I think it's a lot of fun, and who knew that Hader was such a great actor. I mean, I think he's great in the series. He's amazing.
Oh yeah, I just thought he was a comedian. I would never have guessed that he got deep into this character.
He really did. So I have to know. I haven't opened the box that you sent of wine.
What? You didn't?
No, I mean, I want it to be a surprise. I wanted to find out on the air what wine you had selected to pair with the series Barry on HBO.
Okay, so it couldn't be anything too dark. It had to have some lightness to it because, you know, it's part of the show is funny. I picked Soleil Noir, which is Black Sun. I had made it for the solar eclipse.
Ooh,
so it does have some spiciness to it, but it's also a little bit light. And so I thought it was perfect. I thought, you know, for instance, like Carmen or Carmen After Dark was way too deep for this show. I mean, the show had some deep moments, but there's also some hilarity going on, some, you know, little rom-com things going on a little bit. So I couldn't take it too seriously.
That sounds like a perfect match. Now, is that wine available on your website, dannenbergerfamilyvineyards.com?
Yes, it is. In the tasting room on the website. I think it's at a couple of Benny's up north as well.
I think you're right, because I remember when you, I think that was one other time you had paired it with the series. I think it was available at Benny's, so folks can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Elliot, I don't know if you had any suggestions for our next Binge and Uncork. Did you have one? Because I have one, but I don't know if it's too on the nose. Do you have any thoughts, Elliot?
Well, considering I'm still being, you know, it's me picking Marie Kondo.
You're right. Yeah, never mind, Elliot.
Yeah, so I'll pass on this one.
And before I do recommend one, Susan, did you have one? Because I know we hadn't done this for a while, and there might be a series that you had an idea for to pair a wine with. Did you have any suggestions?
Yes and no. So I'm going to be honest. You know, all you people have talked about Game of Thrones for centuries now, and I finally I finally watched all during the Christmas holidays. I am pathetic. I watched all of the seasons, so I'm ready for when the new one comes out.
Uh-huh.
So maybe we'll wait till the new season comes out for that.
Brilliant. Yes.
Since you mentioned Game of Thrones, Susan, I have to know. And I don't want to get into spoilers because there might be people who still haven't seen it yet, although...
Like me.
What were you drinking during the Red Wedding?
I know, right? I was drinking Carmen, actually. I was. Yeah, I thought it was going to be celebratory, so I was kind of shocked about the whole thing, but it was Carmen. So I'm so glad it wasn't a bubbly.
Right? That's sounds... Yeah, right. It would have been such a bizarre move.
Yeah.
So this is on the nose, but I thought it would be interesting. There's a series, I don't know if you've seen on Netflix, there's a series called The Kominsky Method, which is basically the flip side of Barry, where it's a...
I've added it to my list, but I have not watched it yet.
Well, it cracks me up to watch actors sort of share the process of developing a character and being in a scene and being in the moment. So I thought it would be interesting to follow Barry with The Kominsky Method, which stars Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin.
Oh.
And this one, there are some darker moments. It's kind of like the male version of Grace and Frankie. And it's
cool.
I really enjoyed this series. So I thought we would do that one.
Excellent.
Yeah. Elliot, do you have Netflix, right, Elliot?
Yes, I do. And actually, the Kaminsky Method is also in my queue. I've been wanting to get meaning to get that one.
All right. You have your assignments. Yay. Everyone go to DannenbergerFamilyVineyards.com to find out what wines she has available. Maybe subscribe to one of her monthly wine clubs and all the great live events she has at her venue as well. It's a beautiful place to hear music, to hang out, to try some wines and eat some great food. And Susan, I'm hoping that we can get down there. We've got to do a field trip to your destination soon.
Oh, yes, we need to do some fun stuff. I can't wait till it gets warm.
Oh, I know. Well, it's not going to happen tonight. Everyone's got their shovels ready.
How much wine do you have saved up for the weekend, people?
Yeah, I've got my stash. My husband ran out to the grocery store. It wasn't bread and milk. It was wine and whiskey, so it's all good.
Exactly.
Elliot's like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yes, I wish I were there.
Well, you can. I invited you to come over and spend the night for the snowstorm, but next time, Elliot, we had your air mattress ready to go and everything.
All right.
Have a great weekend, you guys.
All right. Good night. Cheers.
Bye, Susan.
Cheers. Coming up after this break, we'll hear the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medical Newsroom. Here's a quick break. February 26th, Chicagoans will go to the polls and vote for a new mayor. When Mayor Emanuel announced that he would not be running for re-election, a lot of people were surprised because that means a new direction for the city. In addition to the mayor's office, all the citywide offices are also up for re-election or a lot of people wanting to run for seats that are not being sought by those existing politicians. And that means that 50 aldermanic wards are also up for grabs. And joining me in studio is a woman who believes that she is ready to be the alderman for the 9th ward. Joining me is Rachel Williams. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Now, did you grow up in the ward that you're running for alderman?
Yeah, I've lived in the 9th ward for the last 18 years. I'm 27.
Uh-huh.
I actually turned 28 on election day, which is going to be really interesting.
Right.
But I grew up in the 8th and the 9th, so where Jay's Potato Chip Factory once was, and between there and where the Pullman District is all the things that I've known for all of my life. And I've seen the differences of past leadership and current leadership, and it's just not what's beneficial for the community.
Is the alderman that's in the office now running for re-election?
Yes, he is.
Okay. And have you, what has been your experience with the alderman that currently resides in that office?
So my experience with specifically Alderman Bill, who is running in the 9th, is that he focuses on the folks who can benefit him. The historic Pullman District, West Chesterfield, folks who have money and class, and that socioeconomic status, instead of focusing on the middle class or the lower middle class and the lower income folks, he tends to leave them out of the conversation, leave us out of the conversation. So one of the reasons why I decided to run is because when we look at what's happening in 9th Ward and all across the city, specifically in Black wards, is that we are facing gentrification, but displacement of Black bodies, and our aldermen have not done anything to rectify those harms that have happening in the last decade.
Tell us about the neighborhood. What communities are in the 9th Ward?
So in the 9th Ward, you have West Chesterfield, Chesterfield, Roseland Heights, Rosemore. I live in Rosemore. You have part of Roseland, Augel Gardens, Golden Gate Park, West Pullman. You have Fernwood in Washington Heights.
Mm-hmm.
Washington Heights is where the JRW Little League team comes from.
That won the World Series
right.
a few years
so,
ago?
Yeah. So that's where they come from. So they're in the 9th, and they're for me, they're still the winners, and they carry a lot of, you know, nostalgia that we actually have something powerful coming from the 9th. But that shouldn't be the only thing that we kind of uplift in the 9th Ward when we have so many great aspects that are happening in the 9th and so many great people who are working to make the 9th livable.
And when you decided to run, and how long has this been in your mind that, you know, it's time for me to get in there and get involved and be a leader?
So I've always wanted to run. I took a step back when I left. When I left college in Kentucky, I took a step back and was like, no, I'm not going to run. I'm going to do community organizing. And then I lost my little cousin in this February of 2017 to Kaya Holmes. And I took a step back and I was like, I'm going to run. And it took a lot for me to get in the space. Actually took me until like a week before petitions are due. I'm like, you know what? I'm really going to run. I'm really going to go after this. And I hit the ground running in between classes, getting people to sign my petitions, talking with folks. I originally was going to do a write-in candidacy, and I'm still doing the write-in candidacy, but I wanted to see what the political process is to get on the ballot. And I saw like the injustices that are happening there and the voter suppression and the candidate suppression that's happening. But it gave me a chance to talk to folks who, a lot of us who are left out of the margins. I am 27. I am on public assistance. So the government shutdown affects me as well. I also deal with transportation stability because I have cerebral palsy. And so I'm a part of these small enclaves that are affected by so many facets of the community and policy changes, and we're forgotten out of the conversation. So having those conversations with people allowed me to see something that was bigger than me, but also re-engage them in a way that this allowing them to see that there is power in numbers, and that they can have representation that looks like them, that is willing to fight for them.
When you have spoken to the people in the communities, what are you hearing? I'm guessing that there is a lot of frustration and there is a need for a better life.
Yeah, you know, I live with my mother. I tell people that all the time. Like, I'm a college student. I live with my mom on 109th and King Drive. Apartment is going for $1,200 a month. Yeah, on 109th and King Drive, where the bus runs out at 11 something, and the only thing you really have is Metro, and that ends at 3. Like, you have no consistency in transportation, really, from 95th on to 119th. You have no reliable transportation happening during the night. So I'm like, why is housing that much? And I know working and being not a working college student, but I'm also a certified home care aide. I have to be able to provide my own transportation, but there are jobs that I cannot access. But we also live in a food desert. Augel Gardens no longer has a grocery store. And like, it's snowing right now, to get from 95th and Red Line to Augel Gardens sometimes can take up to an hour. And
that's not far from, that shouldn't take that long. For folks who aren't familiar with the distance.
Yeah, so 95th Red Line to the very edge of the city, which is Augel Gardens, going out to like Dalton, you know, Harvey, River Oaks, it's not very far, but it's so far. So how it's snowing right now can impact how the bus runs. So if the bus is not having a clear space to see, they're not going to run in the same way it would have ran on a clear day,
right,
which might be a 45-minute ride. And that's the only bus that goes out there. They have no grocery store. They have no accessibility to fruit and vegetables. But then we talk about the inequities of obesity and unhealthy appetites that are happening in our communities because we have nothing. And our alderman does not address that. And building new things like a Walmart and all of that benefits us, but we had to fight for a shuttle bus to get us there. But the shuttle bus doesn't take you all the way into Walmart. That means you have to the shuttle bus drops you off past the parking lot. And if you're an elder or somebody with a wheelchair, with strollers, with walkers, you have to walk past the parking lot to the store. And that bus from my house actually takes an hour. And for me to walk there is maybe 20 minutes.
Right.
But for me to take the bus, it's an hour. So that extends the accessibility to get groceries and how much you're going to spend on your day. So those are things that impact folks that we don't. I think a lot of people who have access and sustainability to transportation, specifically in Boys Town up north, they have that. And they're like, when I have those conversations, and when we were having a conversation about Uber at one point, because my alderman was the one who was pushing for Uber, the special Uber license. And I'm sitting there saying, like, this does not look accessible to us. I am someone who has a disability, and at one point as a teen, if I wanted to hang out with my friends, we're hanging out until 10:30. Oh, so I'm staying at your house. I'm going to get up in the morning and take the bus back, because after 10:30, wherever I am, even I'm on 55th, I can't get home or I'm stuck at the red line. So those are things and how they impact transportation, how they impact jobs, how they impact folks flowing and moving throughout the Ninth Ward if you do not have accessibility to cars.
And for employment, whether it's in the community or somewhere else.
Yeah, it affects it all. You know, at one point, I used to work for Chicago Votes as an intern, which is a nonpartisan voter program, and they do a lot of voter registration and policy stuff, and they now work to get folks who are incarcerated right now at Cook County to get them to vote and get them registered to vote while they're sitting waiting for trial. I used to have to, when we were on the state on Lake and Ashland, if we were having, let's say, phone banking until 10, sometimes the executive director would have to Uber me home because there was no way I could get home in a time that would not leave me stranded. And we're talking about, I had an executive director who was compassionate enough, who understood that, but who's to say that happens for everybody else in whatever job field you are? So that impacts how we move throughout the city and really, really plays a role in how the systems of violence keep happening.
We're talking to Rachel Williams. She's running for the office of alderman for the Ninth Ward. And a great way to understand, I think, our neighborhoods. People have all these ideas and, you know, preconceived ideas about what it means to, you know, where the violence is happening and this sort of blame. So we want to talk to some more when we come back after this break and find out more about Rachel Williams on 720 WGN. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Oh, we are getting some texts, so I'll ask you some questions when we come back. 312-981-7200 on 720 WGN. On February 26th, Chicagoans will go to the polls and decide who their next mayor will be. And there's a pretty crowded field. In addition to that, we're also voting for our aldermen. There are 50 aldermen in the city of Chicago. Bill Daley has said he wants to pare it down. If he wins, he wants to pare it down to 15. And I don't know how that works for representation for people across the city. Our guest is Rachel Williams, and she is running for the office of alderman for the Ninth Ward. And off the air, I decided I'm going to change my career because you were telling me about the campaign process and trying to get your name on the ballot, and I want to be an election attorney now.
Yeah, the election attorneys is where the money is. Like, I used to think, like, oh, being, you know, like a high profile lawyer, I'm like, nah, election attorneys is where you're gonna make your bank.
That sounds
it's really messed up
because there are challenges now. For the first time, you're hearing about all these challenges, I think, more than ever.
Yeah, like, you don't understand, like, for the regular citizen, they don't know that they can challenge candidates. So, but the incumbents do. So the incumbents will use proxies to challenge you. And when they challenge you, they'll do a shotgun of challenges. They challenged me on statement of economic interest, saying that because I did not fill it out properly, meaning one portion said, like, do you have $250,000 in your bank account? Do you have $250,000? And, like, I was going to be a butthole and put, like, do I put my student loan amount on said application and say, like, that's what I owe? Like, that's, for me, I feel like that's my money that I can't ever touch. But to me, it makes me feel some type of way when I get that bill every month. But yeah, so, like, folks don't understand, like, the challenging portion. Because I was talking with folks as I was going through, and I'm like, yeah, you could challenge your alderman. It was like, we can challenge our alderman.
Yeah.
It's like, really? I'm like, yeah. It was like, so we can literally go up there and find ways to challenge it. I'm like, yes, you can. And we're like, man, if I knew that, like, folks don't know that. And that's where that part of, like, voter suppression and candidate suppression. And, like, I watched even my own friends who are running in other wards, like, went through the examination process, watched one of my friends get his own signature knocked off. And I'm like,
his own signature.
Yeah, like, they, like, he's like,
they invalidated his own. Wow.
And I'm looking, like, he's like, my signature's on the end of the petition because I circulated my my own petition. And we're like, well, it's invalid. And I'm like,
wow.
Like, they do things of ways of saying, like, even when our older folks and even our young folks, of course, we change our signatures depending. And they were knocking off signatures. And I'm like, and they were going in the system. They were seeing voter registration cards that say 1984, where they signed it in 1984. I'm like, you know that signature has changed since 1984.
Yeah, I used to put smiley faces over my eye, so it's going to look different.
Like,
now.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm like, if I went to my original voter registration card, I think I did it like February 27th, 2009. It was like my senior year gift to myself. Like, Miss Hamilton, my poli sci teacher, like, I was like, yo, I want a gift. She was like, I'm gonna give you a voter registration card. And I literally signed my name with hearts. So I know for a fact, if they pulled that up, they were like,
yeah, it won't match.
Why? Like,
where's the hearts?
Where's the hearts? And I'm like, it's signatures change, so it's a lot of corruption and ways in which they operate to push people off. And when our folks don't know that or engage with folks, like, I've seen folks running through the city saying, like, sign these petitions. I need you to verify you signed this. And people are like, well, we signed it. Well, I need you to sign it in the way you originally was signing it. And we're like, well, I don't know how I signed it on the voter registration card. Like, people don't know that, and that holds back the process.
I agree. There's a listener who wants to know, this is Kelly. She says, what do you know about the status of the Roseland Medical District? Are you familiar with that?
The status of the Roseland Medical District, it's supposed to, they're trying to make it into a medical district. I know a little bit about the medical district. I kind of focus on more on, like, the environmental side, but what they're trying to do is make it into a more conducive medical district that's beneficial to the community, so forth and so on. It's different ways in which they operate it, and it's because it's changed hands in so much in the last couple of years, it's kind of gotten murky. But I'm like re-engaging in the ways I actually stay abreast of that as well.
I want to make sure that people know, for those who all live in the 9th district or are curious about your campaign, where can they find out more information?
So my campaign website is Rachel, the number 4, T-H-E, the number 9, T-H.com.
So Rachel4thninth.com.
For the ninth.
Rachel4thninth.com. I want to thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck in your campaign, and let us know how things turn out. And regardless of the results, we'd love to talk to you again.
I would love to be back, and just like having these conversations with people around the city is beneficial, because once we know what exists in the all 77 communities in the city, that builds a collective and cohesive city that is able to operate in its full capacity.
I think that you're absolutely right. The more we understand, the more we can really try to find a solution to so many problems that we have here.
Thank you.
Great job, Rachel. More after this on 720 WGN.
Maybe the greatest driver of all time rides shotgun with us, Mario Andretti, talking 50th anniversary of the 500, new movie, and more.
Cars, road trips, and the people who love them. This is your show, On the Road with Dane Neal, tomorrow afternoon at 2 on WGN Radio.
Hi, this is Lindsay from House Smarts Radio, and I'm here with Tom Jenke at Builder Supply Outlet and the Edge Kitchen and Bath. We're looking at freestanding tubs on the showroom floor, and I don't think I've ever seen so many tubs in one place before.
Lindsay, we just received a new shipment of acrylic and cast iron freestanding bathtubs.
And they're gorgeous and great quality.
Aren't they? You know, not all tubs are created equal. We've spent a lot of time researching manufacturers to find the best of the best.
Okay, but really, Tom, how do you keep the prices so low?
Because we deal in such high volume, we can go directly to the manufacturer. That's the best way to keep the prices low.
Makes sense.
And for a limited time only, when you buy...
Watch for Chicago's very own Stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9. Snow is starting to fall in various parts of the state of Illinois. And from the 630, hello, this is Jesus. I drive semis right now. I am on I-55 southbound, and the plow trucks are out. They got the road salted, so it's not too bad. A little bit earlier, except about an hour ago, I was on I-88. The snow is coming down, and it was slicker than fill in the blank. So I can say slicker than hell. We'll say that. I think I can fill in the blank there.
What time is the snow expected to pick up intensity?
After 1 a.m., I believe, last time I checked the weather report from Demetrius Ivory and Tom Skilling, both obviously have issued the updates on that in the forecast. So 312-981-7200, let us know what it's like by you throughout the evening. We want to know how you're doing. Yes, Ken?
That was a great tune, by the way.
You should
incorporate that into the show. It sets a great mood.
Can you play a little more of that for us? That's a good idea. I like that.
I mean, that was a great tune.
The music that we came back with, can we hear a little bit more of that? You're right, because the great thing is...
The snow's coming down, it's dark out, it's just
sets the mood, yeah. If you're drifting off to sleep, it's kind of a nice... And if you're on the road, it's got that sort of beat.
That's like a nice summer...
The instrumental to The Light by Common.
Oh, is this by Common?
Yes.
Oh, you gotta love Common.
We're good.
Should we talk about Gladys Knight? We'll talk about Gladys Knight later.
I was listening to an album on the way, because I have an appalling lack of musical knowledge, and I'm trying to fix that by learning more music every week. But I also did not know that you can go, hey Google, what song is this? And if there's a song playing, I can find out the artist and the song just by saying, hey Google, on my phone, and it will tell me.
But how will it know what you're listening to?
Right now when I have my headphones, it can't. It listens. You see it right now. Sorry, I wasn't able to recognize the song because it can't hear any music right now through my headphones.
That's a problem. That freaks me out because then it's listening at all times.
Yes. But you can turn that off.
Mr. Man in Google is recording everything I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like if you happen to stay in the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow. Where everything is bugged.
I wouldn't be doing that. Well, somebody that you know might be.
Well, there you go.
So, Eric, I wanted to just get Eric's reaction to the last thing that I said, which was, in my opinion, Mueller almost has confirmed the basic guts of the story, the overall general conclusion.
So before we go on, I just want to make sure folks who maybe are tuning in for the first time or just catching up with us, you're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's our finally Friday panel. We don't talk about the big Trump stories of the week for the most part, unless something big breaks. So we wait till Friday. We kind of break it down and get your reaction as well. So 312-981-7200. Joining me in the studio is Ken J. Gubowski. He is the president and CEO of Sirius Enterprises. He's also a crisis communications expert. We have Eric Elk, who is a former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk and the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois. And now that Ken's asked you twice, I've given you a chance to think about it. Eric, what are your thoughts?
What was the question? So I think that we talked about this earlier tonight and last night. And I said that there's a part of me that thought perhaps... Something was leaked to elicit a response so that folks could see how or what, if Mueller would respond.
Interesting. You mean from inside the investigation? Someone leaked it to see, to sort of force his hand a little bit?
Not inside the investigation, I don't think.
Oh. Dave Lundy is texting and saying he agrees with Ken. Dave, you know the number, 312-981-7200. You can give us a call, 312-981-7200, which he was agreeing with, I'm guessing, from the last segment as to why special counsel's office made the statement what it implies.
Yeah, and my feeling that this is almost a confirmation of the basic outlines of the story, which is that the president pressured Cohen to lie to Congress, which, by the way, if it were true, and we're going to have to wait and see, would be a felony punishable by, I think, 18 section. I can't remember the code, but they take this very seriously. This is not a joke. It also would be prima facie obstruction of justice. And we know that because Senator Amy Klobuchar asked our attorney general designee, Mr. Barr, earlier this week, the exact question. If a president were to have pressured or to have caused someone to give false testimony to Congress, is that obstruction of justice? And Barr said, yes.
So does that mean there are individuals in Congress that perhaps know some details about what's going on in the investigation?
Klobuchar, Eric and I talked about this, Klobuchar's questions were so on point in light of yesterday's story. It's almost as if she either knew the story was coming or she knows what's going on. But it was very weird how accurate her questions were.
Right, and then 2 days later, or 3 days later, then
we
you
get
have
this blockbuster,
this report from BuzzFeed. And joining us on the line, all the way from the slopes of Colorado, I believe, is Dave Lundy. Are you in Colorado, Dave?
I am, snowy Colorado.
So you're in snowy. Well, it's snowy here too. It's just not the same sort of access to the slopes, except unless you're going to go to like East Troy.
Yeah, no. We actually have mountains out here. It's very exciting. But I agree with Ken. I think Ken is on it because when I saw this denial, when you say something is, quote, not accurate, that's like the weakest denial of all. It's close to a non-denial denial. He didn't say the story is not true. He didn't say Cohn is not has not offered that. He just said that report with those specific details was, quote, not accurate. I think he has a very specific reason for doing it. We don't know what it is, but BuzzFeed's been on this thing all along. And my bet is fast forward 6 months from now, it's going to turn out they were largely right.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw Ben Smith tonight on CNN, the editor of BuzzFeed. He was flabbergasted, and he asked the special counsel, please tell us what's the problem. They had gone back to their sources. They had gone back over documents. They have no idea what he's talking about.
Let me take a break here, and I want to talk about this some more. I also want to get everyone's thoughts on whether or not BuzzFeed should have run with the story. What responsibility do journalists have when they have this kind of information? Should they share it with us? Should we know while we're still in the midst of the Mueller investigation? More in a moment on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Give us a call or text us at that number, 312-981-7200. Thursday night, BuzzFeed released an article saying that there was evidence to indicate that President Trump had instructed his attorney, Michael Cohen, to lie to Congress. And tonight, Special Counsel Mueller's office released a statement pushing back, and in Ken Jakubowski's words, basically telling everyone to slow their roll. And tonight, the BuzzFeed website has asked Mueller's team to clarify their statement. Now, Ken, you've been focusing a little bit on the headlines. By the way, our conversation is your conversation, 312-981-7200. In studio, we have Ken Jakubowski, the president and CEO of Cirrus Enterprises, also a crisis communications expert, Eric Elk, the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, and former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. On the line with us from the slopes of Colorado is Dave Lundy. He is the president of Aileron Communications and a regular contributor here at WGN Radio. And I want to get everyone's thoughts. Now, Ken, you were pointing out the headlines that are coming out from CNN and other sources really kind of distract or distort the way the story should be told.
You know, it reminds me of when I was in first grade. And I think this was pretty early in first grade when the teacher played a game with us. She whispered something in my ear and wanted me to turn around and tell exactly what she told me to the guy sitting behind me all the way down to the end of the row. By the time I got to the end of the row, it was dramatically changed.
And telephone.
She looked at me like, what did you say to him? And I told her what I said. She's like, okay. So tonight as I'm driving in, I hear someone say, yeah, well, now that the Mueller people have clarified it, they're not the sources for this story. I'm like, what? Where did they get that from? And you get stuff like that by just gleaning, or is it gleaning or gleaming when you take a quick look? Is it a glean or a gleam?
Glean. You glean.
Yeah, you glean.
Something gleaming is shining.
Okay, by gleaning things like headlines and not reading, but just looking and reading a few sentences. And the New York Times has this headline: Mueller's statement disputes report that Trump directed Cohen to lie. It doesn't dispute anything. Maybe cautions on report that Trump directed Cohen to lie. I mean, here we are editing it. But it's instructive for everybody out there who's following this, in a sense, how to read this sort of stuff. I mean, there's no dispute in this. I mean, like I said, I've written hundreds of these things, and this is as purposely vague as anything I have seen. It doesn't say anything, really. I mean, Mueller could be complaining that they referenced an email when it was a memo.
It just says not accurate.
What does that mean? Does mean right? He didn't say wrong. Not accurate. What does that mean? So I take this to Dave. I want to get your reaction to this. I take this to believe that this is almost a confirmation of the overall thrust of the story. There are obviously some details that need to be, you know, maybe I's dotted, T's crossed, maybe.
That'll be semantics.
Yeah.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I would say it's almost a confirmation, but it's pretty close to a non-denial denial. You know, again, you're disputing that some element of this is accurate. And I think this could be as simple as, you know, Mueller prides himself on running a shop that does not leak. And we don't know which law enforcement sources these are. These could be sources in the FBI. These could be sources at the Southern District of New York. We really don't know where this is coming from. But the inference was made that these were Mueller's people who were leaking for the very first time. And so I think Mueller, just to protect himself, decided, you know, I got to put out a statement that will create the perception that we are disputing this story.
Before we continue, I just have a text. We are also asking our listeners to update us on how weather conditions are where they are. Please, 312-981-7200. Here's an important one. 312 says, "Hey, Patty, the roads are just now getting really bad. On my way to work just now, there is a FedEx truck jackknifed at 294 and 290. Things are getting slippery, so please be careful." And I can't stress that enough. Please be careful out there. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, and Dave, this could have come from the New York Attorney General's office, who may have picked up something.
Oh.
There's 17 separate investigations ongoing right now. So we don't know where it's coming from, but I do think the consensus here, Eric, myself, Dave, the consensus is that what Mueller wanted to do was slow this down, put a little ice on this, calm it down, because today it was getting a little out of control in Congress. Democrats are ready to start impeachment proceedings. Some were saying that on the record. There were calls for Mueller to come clean. It was getting intense, and I personally think they felt the need to just throw a little cold water, and I think it worked, because if you watched all the networks tonight, all the cable shows, everyone's confused. Some people are interpreting this as a dark day for journalism, which is, I think, insane. And the poor Ben Smith had no clue what Mueller was talking about. He was like, "Please tell us, what are you talking about?"
When we come back, we'll talk about the statement issued by BuzzFeed demanding that Mueller clarify his statement. And I think it's an interesting element as well. 312-981-7200. More when we come back on 720 WGN. Give us a call. Text us, 312-981-7200. Every network right now is a buzz with the BuzzFeed story from Thursday night and the ensuing statement from Special Counsel Mueller's office. Now, all the headlines are saying that Mueller has disputed or denied or refutes the BuzzFeed article. And on the line, we have Dave Lundy, who is the president of Aileron Communications, and he's also a regular contributor here at WGN Radio. Ken J. Kubowski, crisis communications expert, president, CEO of Sirius Enterprises. Eric Elkin, studio, former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk and president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois. And Dave, you guys, I want to make sure that we get to Joe's statement, because this will be interesting for us to talk about. Joe, what do you want to say?
Hey, listen, my frozen tomato sauce turned out phenomenal last night.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear it. And you're on your cell phone. I know that because there's no echo.
Yeah, and I want to know what you guys pursue and what you find out there, because I can't understand the landline scenario. But to the point, I've been watching Fox News, if you will, so I'm up to speed a little bit on this scenario. And there's a simple point, I think, you know, to resolve this whole issue. What is BuzzFeed's? I hate anonymous donors of information on, you know, identified sources. So BuzzFeed should be able to identify their sources to refute the accusation. Simple as that.
Well, I don't. Joe, first of all, I haven't talked to you in a while. This is Ken, and it's nice.
I know, Ken.
It's nice to have you call in again. You've always added stuff to the show.
A little spice, okay.
Yeah, it's okay. I would not take that approach. We're going to find out at some point within the next few months exactly what's going on, and I think we all have to be patient. And I kind of think that's what Mueller really wanted everyone to calm down, be patient in due course.
If they get into some sort of impeachment, you know, where they're going to start to debate this in the House and everything else, that's really going to devastate his investigation.
And I don't think that's going to happen now, not after the statement he put out tonight.
And the thing here with the idea that they should have to reveal their source or they should be urged to, confidentiality of sources is crucial for journalism. Otherwise, a lot of people might not step forward in cases that maybe you would find crucial to hear about or learn about, Joe. So that's one of the issues here, I think, when it comes to urging them to come forward with their source. Does that make sense, Joe?
It certainly does, Patty. I understand that scenario. But under the circumstances, this is a very, very top drawer, top level issue, if you will. So if BuzzFeed is refuting what Mueller's saying,
right?
I mean, they can really settle it right here.
Well, they're not.
Cite a credibility, a quotient of the sources they have. Well, if they don't want to divulge the individual or the individuals, if you will, cite the credibility quotient.
Well, first and foremost, I don't think they're disputing what Mueller has said. All they have said is, we don't understand it. We've gone back through our sources. We've reread the documents. Tell us where we're wrong. Be more specific. And Mueller's not going to say anything. And second of all, BuzzFeed cannot go public with the confidential identifying the confidential sources because they have an agreement with those sources. The only way they could go public is if a source relieves BuzzFeed of their obligation to keep it confidential. A source talks to BuzzFeed, and a source gets BuzzFeed to agree that they will keep their identity confidential. And they even get to the point where they'll negotiate oftentimes a descriptor as to how that person is described in the story. So it's not BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed can't. Maybe they want to. It's the people who actually gave the information to BuzzFeed that are in control, not BuzzFeed.
Joe, it's a central tenet.
And let me...
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, look, Ken, Eric, and I have all been anonymous sources for media.
What?
I know, shocking.
Many times.
Seriously. What?
And we've... Well, sure, and we've all brokered anonymous sources for journalists, and Ken is 100% right.
You
negotiate that on the front end before you even talk.
I'm a broadcaster. You guys have never shared anything with me. You never gave me any leaks. You guys, does that say something?
We're not anonymous here.
Yeah, but
you announce us.
No, several off the
times.
Air. Off the air, you could tell me, and I wouldn't say who it was that told me. I'm really hurt.
Well, we'll come up with something.
All right, I'm sorry.
We're going to play telephone later.
Dave knows the governor, the new governor of Illinois.
Exactly.
Maybe we'll make up something. And we'll
now
Pat.
You.
Now, okay.
Yeah. By the way, before
I can assure you, I will never give you anything from him.
All right, now we know. Go ahead, Dave. You were saying.
No, but yeah, I mean, the point I was making is, you know, I was just catching up on some of the Twitterverse tonight on this stuff. And, you know, I was reading Neil Katyal, the former Solicitor General, and Jill Weinbanks, the former Watergate prosecutor who lives in Chicago. And they both were pretty much agreeing with what we're all saying. Jill says, look, Mueller's language is hard to parse. It's not clear what he means. Could be quibbling with details. Could be defending the special counsel's office against the implication they were the source of a leak. Or he could be refuting the main accusation. We just don't know. And I think that you have to look at all of this again, and you have to look at the special counsel statement against the backdrop of February 7th. Because February 7th is the day that Michael Cohen goes and testifies before Congress. And right now, the way things have been building over the last 24 hours, that entire session was going to be about what Michael Cohen said to the special prosecutor about Donald Trump and ordering him. And I think that they were desperate to back that off.
I think you're absolutely correct. Now, I'll break a little bit of news. I don't know if you guys are aware of this.
Are you my source?
Anonymous? Are you going to be anonymous?
No, I'm not anonymous. That testimony may not happen.
Oh, you mean the fact that he was supposed to appear before a committee?
Correct. And it may not happen because Michael Cohen is very concerned for his family's safety.
That makes sense.
And his father-in-law's safety.
Okay.
In light of Donald Trump's statements again today about his father-in-law. And he is seriously considering, let's put it this way, he's 50-50. I would say he's absolutely wavering on whether he's going to testify on February 7th. And this has been communicated to the committee chair.
By the way, I want to thank Joe for joining the conversation, and we look forward to hearing from you again. I also, this was something that you brought up with me earlier, Ken, when we were talking about this story, and a listener texted in and said that when Woodward and Bernstein were working on the story, Nixon and Watergate, they did something similar to this, where they shared some of the story, and then there was blowback, and they had 95% of the story right. Is that your...
Yes, they wrote that the president's chief of staff, and this was at a very key point in the investigation, they wrote that the president's chief of staff, and I'm quoting from the story, was one of five high-ranking presidential associates authorized to approve payments from a secret Nixon campaign cash fund. And they cited federal investigators and accounts of sworn testimony before the great Watergate grand jury. Well, the story was inaccurate to the extent that Haldeman was not identified in an account of sworn testimony before the Watergate grand jury. Their main source on this was Hugh Sloan, who was the treasurer of the Nixon campaign. Sloan identified the five people who controlled the fund. One of them was Haldeman. The problem was Sloan was not asked before the grand jury about Haldeman. So Haldeman never came up in front of the grand jury. So that's what was wrong with the story. The story itself was correct. The five guys were identified accurately, but the way they stated it in the story was incorrect because Haldeman was not identified in front of the grand jury, and it led to a firestorm and gave the Nixon White House an opportunity to really push back on the Post and on Woodward and Bernstein. And if you see All the President's Men, there's a moment there where they consider resigning. Deep Throat tells them, you've done almost the impossible. You've made people sorry for H.R. Haldeman.
We've got to take a break here. Our conversation continues after this, and we encourage you to join us. 312-981-7200. Coming up after the news, we're going to talk to Reverend Livingston, who was in the courtroom when the sentencing came down from the judge in the Jason Van Dyke trial and the murder of Laquan McDonald. We're also getting a couple texts from folks throughout the area letting us know what the weather conditions are like where they are. Please let us know. 312-981-7200 from 815 out west Freeport area. Roads are drifting and there's drifting snow and the lines are not visible. So again, I know that it's redundant and perhaps nonsense to some of you when we say be safe, but people get overly confident and maybe get themselves into some trouble on the roads. So please, please be careful. It's the only thing I know how to do right now, and also to update you. When a moment, we're going to hear the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And again, call or text us anytime, 312-981-7200. You know you want to listen to the Steve Cochran Show as he celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Here with your news is Roger Badish. After a day-long hearing, the judge who presided over the sentencing of Jason Van Dyke issued a sentence that was six and three-quarter years in prison, and most likely he'll only serve less than 3.5 years for the murder of Laquan McDonald. And we have had many of our reporters, of course, from the Chicago Tribune and WGN Radio, Eric Rung, Stacey Sinclair, joining us throughout the day and giving you some insight on that. And we have on the line with us Reverend Gregory Livingston, who was in the courtroom as well, and I wanted to get his thoughts about that. Reverend, I want to let you know, in studio we have Eric Elk, Kenjay Gubowski, and also joining us on the line is Dave Lundy, our Friday Night Regulars. And I wanted to get your thoughts. I saw you in the footage, and it had to be just a stunning decision when you heard the judge's sentencing. What were your thoughts?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's great to be able to be on your show always, Patty, you know, the queen of the night. And but I'll tell you, you know, this has been a very long road, and it's not done yet. But here's a situation where a video basically brought about the understanding of a deep cover-up in the city, a video that brought about the ouster of a state's attorney, the firing of a police superintendent, and eventually this video, you know, catalyzed Mayor Rahm Emanuel not running again for a third term for mayor of Chicago. And so for me, what I see happening here is that this cover-up has mushroomed into a full-blown conspiracy. And so for all the conspiracy theorists out there and the like, but, you know, you have Dominica Stevenson, you have Ed Burke, you have, you know, the video on Thursday's bench trial, that this video that meant so much, basically being disparaged and reduced to saying, well, we don't need this video. Then the next day, 16 shots in the cover up Friday, 16 shots in the cover up has been this chant, you know, for over these years. And all of a sudden that is pushed to the side as well. And for me, I just see it as the machine protecting itself. The machine was kind of shocked and knocked off its square by the public reaction to that video. And so the machine had to regain its balance. I mean, you have one of the candidates saying they were part of the Laquan McDonald fight and everything. And I held plenty of press conferences on the fifth floor of City Hall, and we pushed for Rahm's resignation and all those things. And I never saw anybody marching across the hall from the county side saying, we're with you, we're with the people. So, again, for me, the cover-up has mushroomed into a full-blown conspiracy, and we've only begun to see this unraveling, even with this particular decision in court today.
When the judge yesterday acquitted the three police officers accused of the cover-up, did you get a feeling like, well, Friday is going to be bad too?
Oh, without a doubt, the two were definitely connected. You know, I mean, when the guys were acquitted on Thursday, you know, and then Friday came, you know, at one point the judge pulled me out of the courtroom for whatever, you know, reason. I go back there to his chambers, and we had a good discussion, and he knew he had a powder keg in front of him. But I got to tell you, I knew then from just that conversation with the judge, you know, before, I think it was right before lunch or something like that, in his chambers, you know, to reprimand me or do whatever it was. I knew then that this, when he's talking to me about a powder keg, we already know what's going to happen in terms of a decision. And so, you know, but it's 6.9 years in prison, you know, and so, you know, and my heart went out to both families. But one thing I realized after the decision was made is that the Van Dyke family won't ever have to worry about money, because Jason will be out before he's 50 years old, I guess. I don't know how old he is. But he's going to get a book deal, and he's going to do 6.9 years for a few million dollars. So that's going to work out for them quite well.
Ken, you wanted to say something? Oh, sorry.
So 6.9 years, and I'm guessing that he's eligible for early release for good behavior and all those other sentence reductions?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, it's 2 years mandatory. So then after that, like I think Patty, in her introduction, you know, at 3.5 years, he could be out in 3.5 years. And that was something that was said 2 months ago. So, you know, a lot of people saw this coming because, you know, the Chicago Police Department, one of the ways that I characterize this is that this is Black Chicago versus law enforcement. What does this mean? And so this entity called the Chicago Police Department was not going to just die and not do anything. It kicked back in all of its ways. you know, people have been talking about that Dominica Stevenson is one of Ed Burke's judges, because Ed Burke would never run for mayor of Chicago, because if he did, he would lose power. So, you know, and his tentacles reach deep, they reach far. There are so many people tied into things. Chicago is a corrupt city. And it is on another level when it comes to corruption. But I do believe that, you know, this conspiracy, in terms of it's like a boil or a pimple that's ready to burst.
Sorry. But look, you know, when you say that, you know, people get defensive when it comes to the police department, and yet many people will say that, as you mentioned, the city is corrupt, and so you can't extract what happened today and say, you know, this, well, CPD, you know, or Jason Van Dyke operates sort of outside of that structure. I mean, if the assumption is that the corruption is deep within city politics and the judicial system, I think that's hard to say that, but not CPD. Dave, what are your thoughts on today's verdict?
Well, you know, first of all,
sentencing.
I was disgusted. But I'm not sure which one I was more disgusted by. Yesterday's abdication of judicial responsibility to hold the Chicago police responsible for their culture of cover-ups, or today's devaluation of an African American man with this crazy sentence. And it seems that in both cases they violated case law. You know, in today's sentencing, you know, I had always heard that because of the fact that they were charged each shot was aggravated battery with 6-year sentence, that he was going to get minimum of, you know, 50, 60 years in prison. And it seems that the judge today took a very different perspective on what the requirement was. And so I'm waiting to see if there's an appeal of the sentence, because this sentence was outrageous and completely unjust.
We'll continue this conversation. On the line with us is Reverend Gregory Livingston. You can follow him on Twitter. Reverend, what's your Twitter handle?
At GS Livingston, at GSLIVINGSTON.
And I thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late. I want to take a break here.
That's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And our number is 312-981-7200. We encourage you to join the conversation anytime. 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. On Friday, former Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke became the city's first patrolman in almost 50 years to be convicted of murder. The judge sentenced him to just under seven years for second degree murder. He also faced 16 counts of aggravated battery, but the judge's decision was to focus on and make the sentencing on the second degree charge and second degree murder conviction. Joining us on the line is Reverend Gregory Livingston. Dave Lundy's on the line as well. We have in studio Eric Elk and Kenji Gubowski. You guys, I want to make sure that our listeners have a chance to join the conversations too. So I'm going to go to Tom right now, who is calling from the 847. Hey, Tom, how are you doing tonight?
All right, and yourself?
I'm doing all right, thank you. We're glad that you're joining us. What did you want to say?
Well, I'm not going to mention my last name because there's no sense in it, but when I was young and dumb and whatever, I got arrested by the federal government for conspiracy of selling 100 pounds of marijuana, and did 3 years on a 10-year sentence. Uh-huh. Never found anything, never found the drug, never found anything at all. Because I talked about it, I got arrested.
Wow.
This guy killed somebody. And he got sentenced 6.75 years, which he's probably already done with. I just hope he goes to a prison like I did.
Oh, boy.
So.
Yeah, a lot of Tom, a lot of people, even Patty Blagojevich tweeted out tonight that her husband got 14 years for just talking, as you just said, talking about something with people.
Yeah. I don't understand the justice system anymore. I'm American. I love America. I believe in justice and everything. I just don't believe in this justice.
Tom, thank you so much for your insight on this, and we appreciate it. We hope we hear from you again, okay?
You have a wonderful evening.
You too, Tom. Thank you. Be well.
Yeah. Hey, Patty, can I just say something?
Of course, Reverend.
You know, I was sitting next to Kevin Graham, the president of the FOP. We were sitting next to each other in court, and in front of us was Dean Angelo, who was the former president that preceded Kevin. Well, on the stand, you know, Dean Angelo said something quite interesting. He said, had there just been two shots, we wouldn't be in court today. Had there just been two shots, we wouldn't be here. But it's the other 14 shots are the reason that we're here. I was shocked to hear him say that, and he was, you know, a witness for the defense. And so even he, and being truthful, even as a defense witness, you know, these 14 other shots, you know, were significant. And for the judge to say, I'm not going to sentence based on those 14 shots just on second-degree murder, you know, it's kind of like it's one of those, like a Jedi mind trick or something, right? You know, and this whole thing, you know, this sentence that Jason received, it just makes no sense, but it makes sense. It makes us realize how broken our system really is.
We have a text from the 312. I believe the sentence was fair. The cop was very remorseful. The cop is being used as an example of bad cops. It was not a premeditated murder. It was an accident. Those cops lied on the stand when they said that Jason was not in any harm. Jason Van Dyke is a good guy making a bad decision. And that's from, yes, Eric?
What would have happened if the role was reversed?
If there was, if Laquan McDonald had shot
correct
the police officer? Well, yeah.
No, but I mean, to that texter, I mean, come on. A person's life was taken. How can you say?
It's a bad decision.
Laquan would still be smoking in that electric chair had he done that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it. It was a murder.
Yes.
Now, Governor Blagojevich got 14 years for basically being a knucklehead.
Well, here.
This guy got 6.75. I mean.
For taking a life.
John has a. Go ahead, Dave. Before I go to John, I'll go to you. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. How do you accidentally shoot somebody 16 times?
Right. Well, the listener's saying that it was a bad decision 16 times.
Yeah. No kidding.
Bad decision. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Here, let's go to John. Hey, John, thank you so much for calling. What did you want to say?
Yeah. I was going to say you're comparing apples and oranges when you start comparing different types of charges, different sentencing. It's all different. And this cop, when he got out of his vehicle and saw a knife-wielding individual, you don't know what kind of pressure he was under to handle the situation. I don't think he really meant to shoot that many times, but, you know, you get wrapped up in the moment, and I think that's what may have happened. I'm not saying he was right, but I'm just saying we can't judge a cop on considering the pressures they're under all day long in confronting individuals that are threatening.
I get that. I understand where he's coming from.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah.
But that's why they're trained, too. You know, that's why they have training. That's why they go through psychological training, because they are expected to have situations like this. It was not a gunfight that he stepped out into. You know, there was no crossfire going on there. You know, he just jumped out the car. There was a guy in the street, you know, and he starts shooting him. And it was one person versus, you know, what was it, 9 other police officers. So I don't accept that argument.
Well,
because, again, he didn't come into gunplay or crossfire. And that wasn't the situation at all.
Well, John.
Sure, him in a cap and gown.
Well,
come on.
Well, John.
That's not the type of individual he was.
Well, John, here's the thing is that there were other police officers on the site. And to Reverend Livingston's thoughts about how it's about the training, none of the other police officers who had already been on site open fire. None of them.
In fact, I think I watched the video probably 100 times. And at a certain point, I just started watching the other officers. I got the impression that they were all in shock. Like, whoa, what are you doing? But, I mean, you know, what were they going to do at that point? It was happening.
Thank you so much for calling, John. I appreciate that. We also have now, Dave, did you say that you were wondering if the prosecutors were going to appeal the sentence? Or did you mean that that Jason Van Dyke's attorneys might appeal the sentencing?
No, I'm wondering if the prosecutors are going to appeal the sentence.
Can they do that? Because a listener says that they cannot. I can't imagine that you can appeal.
I'm not clear, because when Eddie Verdoliak was sentenced by Milton Schader to 6 months, or to, sorry, to probation. The prosecutors appealed the sentence, and the sentence was thrown out.
I have no idea.
And Eddie Verdoliak was sent to jail. So I don't know why you couldn't appeal the sentence.
Reverend Livingston.
It's not double jeopardy.
Right. Reverend Livingston, have you heard anything about that?
I haven't. You know, I thought about it, but, you know, in the milling around after the decision, after the judge let everybody go, nobody really talked about an appeal yet because everybody was in shock. And people were, you know, kind of concerned about what might be happening outside because we had been basically cooped up there all day. And I'll be very honest with you. I was hoping that the snow would start and the snowstorm would be awfully cold because this is a very emotional thing that happened today. And, you know, the cold is one thing, but the snow is another. And I was praying that the snow would be coming down because, you know, let's think. You know, let's think. Let's have some time, everybody, to kind of settle and think this thing through before people start executing street justice, if you will.
Reverend Livingston, before we go to the news, any thoughts that you want to share before we go about what the community is experiencing and what people need to know about this moment in Chicago's history?
Sure. You know, again, this is a situation, and let's be very open and honest. As a white cop, as a black teenager, he was brutally murdered. You know, I mean, there was not any equal or opposite force that was coming at the officer. The kid was on the ground. You know, he was shot and said he was twitching. Well, you know, he could help but twitch because he had these bullets tearing his flesh apart. And so, you know, the video says it all. We've been lied to. We've been asked to believe a lie. We've been asked to have lying eyes. And, I, you know, my thing is, you know, we're still fighting. We have a lot to do. We just have to plan and to understand what it means to fight a machine, you know, that's here in Chicago, a machine that's from Springfield to Chicago and beyond. I want to hear what our new governor has to say. I want him to weigh in on this in a real way. And we got a lot of work to do. And we ain't stopped fighting yet, Patty. We going to keep this thing going because we see something like this happen, there's no way we can stop fighting.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on this, Reverend Livingston. I look forward to talking to you again soon and hopefully in studio. I know it's a snowy night and I gave you short notice. So I appreciate how generous you've been with your time.
Real deal. Be in the studio with you soon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. More after this on 720 WGN. To our listeners who are giving us some of their weather updates and what the conditions are like in their areas. From the 847, tons of snow here in the northwest suburbs in Cary, Illinois. 312, light snow here in Hinsdale, and salt trucks are out on the streets and the roads, on the roads already. We'll probably be getting heavier snow by morning. And thank you so much, Tracy, for the update. And we encourage you to share with us. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us anytime to let us know what's going on or join the conversation. You can call or text 312-981-7200. Joining me in studio is Ken Jakubowski, a crisis communications expert and the president and CEO of Cirrus Enterprises. And we have Eric Elk, who is the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois, and the former chief of staff for Senator Mark Kirk. Ken requested that we spend a few moments discussing Gladys Knight, and now we will find out why.
Well, the fact that you asked that question the way you did.
I don't know what's happening. What happened?
Is going to underline what I'm about to tell everybody. So, for the last several years, I have wagered on one wager on the Super Bowl, and that is the length of the national anthem.
Oh.
And I have won like 9 of these in a row. And the key is understanding the background of the person who's singing. Now, a lot of people will go, they'll check out YouTube to see if they've performed before. Just think of the circumstances. Gladys Knight has been plucked from relative obscurity. Now, we all know Gladys Knight.
You mean as far as like somebody who's popular now?
Yeah, she's not Lady Gaga. She doesn't have top 10 hit out. I mean,
but isn't the Super Bowl in her hometown?
There you go. She's an icon. There's no question. I mean, she's Gladys Knight, for God's sakes. But she's not someone that if I were to say name the top 20 hot performers now, you would name. Even though from an overall perspective, of course you would name her. So Gladys Knight gets a global platform to sing the national anthem. MyBookie.com is the first to open up odds and bets. They're taking bets now. They don't know who's playing the Super Bowl, but you can right now go to MyBookie.com and actually place a wager on whether Gladys is going to go over or under. I think it opened at like a minute 45. I don't know where it's at now. It'll change depending on who bets. Take the over. She will sing that thing. You'll be sitting in your living room going, "Sing it, sister, sing it."
You should be standing.
Oh,
in your living
man,
room.
She's gonna sing and sing and sing.
Gonna stretch it out.
She will stretch. I bet it goes 2.5.
Really? What's the longest ever?
I don't know. I had Lady Gaga going over about 2-3 years ago. She went way over for the same reason: global platform, opportunity to shine on a global scale. And Gladys Knight, this is awesome for her to have this opportunity again.
Absolutely.
My gut tells me she's going to milk this for every second that it's worth. And God bless her, she deserves it. And she'll do, I'm sure, a fantastic job.
Are the Pips going to be there?
I did not hear about the Pips. I think it's just Gladys Knight.
Do you want to guess what the longest national anthem ever was?
Oh, boy. Like ever? Regardless?
Ever. Super Bowl. I apologize.
Super Bowl, I'm going to say somewhere around 3 minutes.
What do you think? Do you guys want to bet on this? More or less than 4 minutes. I already gave you an answer, didn't I?
Less.
And who was the performer?
In 2013, Alicia Keys.
Oh yes,
smashed the earlier record.
Oh yeah. I had that. I had her over. She wouldn't stop singing. I didn't know it was that long. She kept going to the point where I'm like, "Come on, okay, enough,
we
gotta
play
enough.
A game here. Come on."
Every word she just extended, like, "Say." I mean, it was amazing.
Ro, can you find Alicia Keys singing the national anthem in 2013? In the end, her spiritual performance clocked in at 4 minutes and 55 seconds.
Oh,
wow!
Now I don't think Gladys will get 4:55, but I think she's going to go way over the 1:45, 1:47 that MyBookie.com has it at.
By the way. According to this website, it is also the longest recorded rendition. Yeah, let's hear a little bit of.
Oh, this is great.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
And I had the over.
It was only 5 minutes.
And I'm yelling, "Stretch it, stretch it."
4 minutes and 41 seconds.
Is that what it is?
And as soon as she actually started playing, you could tell this was going to go way over. This is milking it. And it's beautiful.
But don't you also think that playing the piano also helps you with your pace?
Yeah.
And for everybody listening, it's not as startlingly long.
It's not as brutal with the nice melody.
Yes. None of these are brutal, really. I thought this was a beautiful performance, and for someone who bet on the over, I was thrilled. I was so excited.
So the question is, does Gladys see this and go under?
I don't know if she's going to play. Will she play an instrument? I don't know. Maybe MyBookie.com has odds on that. They do have odds on what wardrobe she's going to wear, what color. You can wager on that too.
I say silver.
I don't know if that's I don't know if that's an option.
Why? What do you mean it's not an option? For the betting?
Yeah, I think they give you
other. Can I choose other?
No, you cannot.
Other should be. What am I wrong? I mean, like if they don't have chartreuse on the list.
So if I'm Gladys, if I'm Gladys, I get all my relatives and I say, "Listen, I love you, but none of you are coming to the game. You're all going to take a pile of cash. I want you to go to Mississippi Casino. You're going to Vegas. You're going to New Jersey. They're all going to bet on the length of the anthem. She's going to cash in like crazy. Give everybody a 15% cut plus expenses."
By the way, I know you wanted to. I want. I think that the 312 is texting to the wrong show because there's nobody named Jim here. But thank you so much for your text. By the way, Gladys, did you hear Gladys Knight sort of stirring up some controversy? I know you wanted to keep this fun, but she, by the way, after it was announced that she was going to be singing the national anthem, she said that she's speaking out again about Colin Kaepernick's kneeling and saying she's going to give voice back to the national anthem.
Oh, it's going over, folks. So listen,
there it is.
Especially government employees, go get your loan from the bank, take a piece, put it on the over. It'll pay your loan back. Trust me.
Yes.
This baby's going over.
I understand what Mr. Kaepernick is protesting, and that is police violence and injustice. But it is unfortunate that our national anthem has been dragged into this debate, when the distinctive senses of the national anthem and fighting for justice should each stand alone.
She's going to do justice to this song. She's going to do justice to this song.
Yep. I am here today and on Sunday, February 3rd, to give the anthem back its voice, to stand for that historic choice of words, the way it unites us when we hear it, and to free it from the same prejudices and struggles I have fought long and hard for all my life. From walking back hallways, from marching with our social leaders, from using my voice for good, I have been in the forefront of this battle longer than most of those voicing their opinions to win the right to sing our national anthem on a stage as large as a Super Bowl. She's going 10 minutes.
She is not going to Billy Joel this. Now, when I say that, Billy Joel's sang it a couple times. So
he's done it, I think, twice.
And if he were singing, I'd say, you know, what does he care? You know, he's just been there, done that. He'll
just
do a straight rendition, in and out. This is going to be special. And it's great. I'm glad. I'm really glad. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I don't know if she'll play piano or not. Or if she'll just sing it. I don't know.
Just sing it. And now, who do you pick? Who do you think is going to be in the Super Bowl, Ken?
Well, that's the other thing. So last week I gave out some picks, and I had a bad day. I was 2-2, and my bonus under on the first half in the Patriots game was, it went over in the first quarter. I was wrong on that. So it was a bad week for Ken, and anybody who followed Ken, they would have lost a little bit of money. I like the New Orleans Saints laying the 3 points over the Rams. And if you don't want to follow me on this, that's okay. I get it. A lot of people are on the Chiefs. I understand it. But I'm going with the New England Patriots +3. And I'm also betting the Patriots on the money line, which is +140.
As we talked earlier, you have a veteran quarterback with the Patriots and Tom Brady and a rookie with the Chiefs. Always go
with the veteran. I mean, I know Patrick Mahomes is wonderful and is fantastic, but you give me Bill Belichick and Tom Brady in a winner take all game, and I don't care. If I lose, fine, I lost, but I'm going down with the Patriots. If I lose, I'm going down with them. And that's, you know, I mean, I've seen the Patriots play about 10 times, seen Kansas City play about 10 times, and objectively, I would say Kansas City's a better team. But I don't care. This is Sunday.
This is a different stage, man.
This is a whole different stage. So I'm taking the Patriots, and I think you'll see Mr. Brady on one side and Drew Brees on the other, and their hand will be over their heart listening to Gladys Knight sing the national anthem.
Well, and to that, by the way, a listener asks, do you happen to know who sang the shortest Super Bowl national anthem and what the time was?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know.
Oh, here you go. By the way, there's a website. Odds Shark will give you the time. It looks like it might have been. Well, let me know. Through 773, do you know? Danny wants to know if we know. I just looked it up, so I kind of cheated.
Who the shortest one is?
Yeah, here's some of your choices. Billy Joel, Jordan Sparks, Jennifer Hudson, Carrie Underwood, Christina Aguilera, Kelly Clarkson. Those are some of your choices for the...
What were the first two?
Let me find out.
Jordan Sparks and Billy Joel?
Yeah, Billy Joel was at, so far, it looks as though from this list, it looks like it was Billy Joel at minute 30.
I would say Billy Joel. And that's doesn't. And I bet it was the second time he performed, not the first.
Let me take a look and make sure this is right, because I'm on oddshark.com. I can't believe I'm on a betting site. Is that Oddshark is one of the sites you go to or no?
Oh, well, mybookie.com is primarily the place I go.
Let's see. I'm trying to find one that's shorter than
a
minute.
It's a heck of a name for a website, isn't it? Mybookie.com. I mean, think about that. That was available. You could have bought that URL.
Do you have Billy Joel singing it?
I do, actually. And Billy Joel is a minute and 48 seconds. Check it out.
Here to honor America with the singing of our national anthem, please welcome a 6-time Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, New York's own Billy Joel.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
See, the first few notes, I would have, if I bet the over... I would be ripping my ticket up. He's flying through this.
But he sounds mechanical. It's interesting.
He's just flying. He's just getting through it. I bet this was his second time he did it. That's just my hunch. First time, I think he might have.
Oh, Watched.
Yeah, this is getting through it. Just doing it, getting through it, getting my check.
Interesting.
The bomb's bursting.
Those are all the over
people.
He's
almost done.
Slow down.
I'm sorry, I made everybody stand up now.
He's like, I've had enough. We're in and out of here.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
Hey, let's play ball.
All
right. Wow. And the amount of time like it took Alicia Keys to do the first line is how long it took him to finish the whole thing. Okay, sorry, but I didn't mean to make you stand. And those of you driving, maybe saluting.
But
the hand of your heart.
For those who are who want to hear something actually really cool. The best rendition that I've ever heard of a national anthem was 1984 NBA All-Star Game, Marvin Gaye.
Oh.
Nobody comes close. You can find that and put that on.
We'll do that for our Something that Good when we come back. More amazing. After this on 720 WG. And Rose, like, okay, we have to go to a break first.
Say, can you see? So proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming. Whose broad stripes and pride.
Marvin Gaye singing at which sporting event?
1984 NBA All-Star Game.
Before we go, we've got to get to our something good, but I also want to get to our text. Kaepernick doesn't know police brutality. He's just a kid. Gladys Knight truly understands police brutality and racial discrimination. She sang Soul from Motown. That's from the 312. And then another listener from the 304 says, on a side note about Gladys Knight, she has just recorded a song with Boy George and Culture Club called Runaway Train from their new album Life, which entered the UK charts at number 12 a couple months ago. The version of this song was Gladys Knight will be released as a single this spring. Before we go, what's your something good, Ken?
Oh, gosh. We've got football and more football on Sunday. And you know what? It's just a great weekend because there's going to be snow on the ground and it's great guacamole, chips, watch movies, hang out, relax.
Ooh.
Because there's nothing,
good.
No place, you don't want to go anywhere in the snow.
Eric, you're something good?
I'm just glad it's finally snowing.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Tell me something good, Ro.
I'm going to be at Sox Fest all weekend.
Hey, that's awesome.
So I'm excited.
Outstanding. Roger, tell me something good.
I get to drive on Lakeshore Drive.
Be safe out there, Roger.
Don't pull a Prince Philip.
Please. I'll tell you afterwards.
Yeah,
please. If we get into this again. I'm excited on Sunday night. I will be at Sketchfest. I'm performing at 6 p.m. Come out and see me. You can go to stage773.com to see the show. And also, my something good is that I have a teenager, and that when it snows, that helps because he can shovel. Let's take a quick break here and then the news on 720 WGN.